Season 2 of Love in Context podcast welcomes you. Get ready for engaging, unscripted conversations with your hosts, Ben and Spencer. Our mission remains unchanged: to explore the Bible through the powerful lens of love.
In this new season, we'll embark on a journey together, unearthing fresh insights and gaining deeper understanding of how we can love God and live out our faith in practical ways.
So let's dive into this season of Love in Context, where love and the context of the Bible intersect to transform our lives.
Welcome to the Love in Context podcast. Y'all excited?
I'm excited.
Okay. I'm sure they said yes too.
But I raise up in the morning and I'm like, woot woot, it is time.
Right?
I actually say it exactly like that, and Tara's like, what did you say? And I'm like, nothing.
Nothing.
I said nothing.
You see those reels where it's like where it's like the tired one person's tired and they're like, oh, and they're like, and I married a morning person, and they like come running in the room like, hey.
Yeah, that's my wife.
Yeah. Yeah.
She is I think we hit 8:30 and she's like, oh, I think I should go to sleep. And then 4 o'clock in the morning, she's up and she's like, gotta get my day started. And she's like, I feel like my day is wasted. I was like, well, part of it is because you went to sleep before the day was done.
So yeah, like Lindsay works at, she leaves the house at 3:30 in the morning for work.
Yeah.
And so a couple times a week, I'm like, I meet her on her lunch break at 8 a.m.
Yeah. Yeah. There are some people who are listening who are going to feel that because they are morning people. I personally am not one of those. I do get up at the same time pretty much every day, and I have worked to make myself functional. Now, the interesting thing is I have two boys, and one of them wakes up like Tara, and one of them definitely wakes up like me. And the one that wakes up like Tara doesn't understand that the one that wakes up like me, you can't just come and start yelling in his face. It does not work well.
Well, I mean, you can. There's just consequences, right? See, my daughter woke me up this morning, and I was like, five more minutes.
Five more minutes.
I need five more minutes.
And I'm sure she gave it to you.
She actually did.
Oh, that's surprising.
Yeah, she actually went back to her room and got ready and gave me 5 minutes. It was great.
So before we get into today's episode, there's going to be this episode and one other one that's going to come between our spiritual gifts, and then we're going to be talking into the book of James. We are currently lining up our times to sit down with the people who are going to be guests during the book of James. Mm-hmm. And that's why we decided to put a couple of extra episodes, things we thought were fun to talk about, but aren't part of a mini series per se.
Fun fact about Alaska, people are horrible at texting you back.
Like, I'm talking about you, Cade King.
Just call it out. They are horrible at texting you back. Yeah. That's not like just a local to where we are thing.
Yeah.
That's like across the state. Like I have friends all across the state and I'll text them and it'll be like 2 days later you get text back.
Well, you also run the thing in Alaska. Summers are strange here because everybody loves being here during the summer. Uh-huh. But for whatever reason, right when you hit the summer, everybody travels.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Everybody loves the summer here, but we always travel during the summer, mostly because there's more flights, they're less expensive, all those different things that kind of come. But so trying to get people like lined up too is sometimes difficult.
Yeah. So today we're going to be talking about the idea of safe places.
Safe places.
Which
it's like in baseball when you slide into home plate and like safe.
Not at all, actually.
It's not at all like that.
But we might be upsetting the apple cart a little bit on this one. So just note that this conversation probably is going to be most relevant for people who are in some sort of ministry leadership.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to be unrelevant for those who are not.
Yeah, it's not exclusively for them.
Yeah, it's not exclusively for them. First off, is we want to disclaim saying that we're going to speak generally.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's, the situations in your ministry and your community, stuff like that. We are going to speak generally.
Yep.
So this might not directly apply to your specific location, mm-hmm. or it might. And then the second thing that I would just want to just caution everybody on is, even though we are upsetting the apple cart on this, we do want to do it, and we were going to try to do it in a way to where it feels approachable.
Yeah.
So just be warned on those two things.
Yeah. So largely today, we're going after this idea of, should the church be a safe place? And what does it mean to be safe?
Yeah.
Right? So in case you have not got turned off from us from the Women in Ministry and our talk about tongues and healing, we're going to just make sure that we just go all out and just make sure, like, you actually want to be here at this point.
Yes. And so, yeah. So let's dive into the idea of a safe place. Mm-hmm. So I have talked with pastors and ministers over the 16 years I've worked in ministry. Mm-hmm. And a common thing that comes up is like, oh, we're just trying to create a safe place. Mm-hmm. And the issue with that is the definition of safety means to be void of risk. Mm-hmm. And the gospel is actually increases your risk in life.
Right.
It doesn't. So when you're saying, hey, we want to be safe, you're actually saying you're actually limiting your capacity to deal with the mess.
Right.
In people's lives. And so we want to just kind of address that a little bit. And first thing I want to address is I think the heart behind what people are getting at here is good. Mm-hmm. Like they want to create a place where people feel like they can let their guard down and let the mess in their life be dealt with,
mm-hmm.
right? Which I think that is good. The problem is that's not safe because
correct.
When you are dealing with mess in your life, it actually brings up trauma, brings up things like addiction in the past or whatever, and often takes a lot of time to process through. So an example of this is there's a church I talked to about 5 years ago, and they were like, yeah, we just want to create a safe place. And they're like, awesome. And they're like, we're starting a new ministry. I was like, oh, that's awesome. What are you doing? They're like, we're doing prison ministry.
Yeah, it's not going to be safe.
Do you know why those people are in prison?
Yeah. I mean, because they broke some law.
Right, right. And I 100% applaud them doing the prison ministry, right? But it's like, that's not going to be safe.
Well, but it's 100% appropriate, a thing you should do.
Yes.
Right? But like prison ministry is not safe. Like you have no idea why people are in there.
No.
Right. It could be anything from tax fraud.
Yeah.
To they murdered someone.
Yeah.
Right. Or anything in between.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some TV shows. I think Psych is one of them where mm-hmm. he like goes undercover in prison
mm-hmm.
and then he comes up with some like ridiculous excuse of why he's there. And the person next to him is like, I killed someone.
Yeah.
Or it was something like that. And he's like, oh.
It's much easier.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's much easier explanation.
Right.
Well, so if we can take a step back really quick, this idea of devoid of risk, I run into that in financial things, right? Like that's actually a conversation that I have with people around the financial basis because people will talk about with their money. They say, well, I want to grow, but I don't want to have any risk. The problem is there is no such thing as risk avoidance.
Uh-huh.
In other words, there's always going to be risk. So in money and in life. And let me explain like on a physical commodity, talking about money, why that's the case. If you invest in the stock market, you have risk of companies growing, companies collapsing, companies going out of business, right? Yeah. If you don't invest in the market, you now have inflation risk and you have a number of other risks as well.
Uh-huh.
So whether you put the money in the market or not, you actually have risk. The question is, which risk are you most willing to accept?
Yeah, and you can mitigate risk.
Correct.
Right? So what we're not saying is we're not saying, hey, just go willy-nilly with your church and let everything fly.
Right.
Like, that's not what we're saying. Like, should you background check people who are going to work with adolescents? Absolutely. Right? Should you train up your congregation well? Absolutely.
Yep.
Should you have things like faith and conduct agreements where it's like, hey, if you're going to volunteer, this is what we expect?
Absolutely.
Those are great. Those are great things. Like you can mitigate risk. Like same with the stock market, right? Mm-hmm. If someone came up to you and said, hey, I'm going to put $3 million in Tesla.
Mm-hmm. We're going to get flagged on that one.
Yeah, right. You might get flagged on it. You also might be like, maybe we should diversify a little bit.
Right.
Right. Or a lot. But maybe we should change up our strategy a little bit.
Well, and it's one of these conversation pieces where that may or may not be appropriate, but it's not going to be appropriate for everyone.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, comes back to your thing is that when you were talking about individual churches, you know your situation. You know your circumstance. Like, you're not going to be the same as us.
Uh-huh.
Right. And so the way that we do our church is not necessarily going to be the same as the way you do your church because you know the circumstances around it and what's important for mitigating risk, but also forwarding the gospel to make transformative places.
Yeah. So a couple points of scripture that we can reference on this. Mm-hmm. So one is Matthew 10.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus is sending his disciples out. He says, you're going to heal, you're going to proclaim the gospel, all this mm-hmm. good stuff. Then he gives this call to be like sheep amongst wolves.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about you. We don't have sheep where we're at, but we got mountain mm-hmm. goats.
Yep.
All right.
We do have wolves, though.
We do have wolves. And I can tell you right now, the mountain goats do not hang out with the wolves.
No, they do not.
Not intentionally. And when they do, it's usually not good for the mountain goats.
It is not.
No. So, like,
generally, it doesn't go well for anything that hangs out with wolves.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wolves are mean. So he calls us to be like sheep amongst wolves. That's not a safe place to be.
Right.
Right. And then he goes on and he gets down to Matthew 10:28 and he says, hey, don't fear the one who can just condemn your body. Instead, fear the one who can condemn body and soul to hell.
Mm-hmm.
So he's referring to God. And a lot of times we read this passage, we're like, wow, that's a dark verse. But really what Jesus is saying is he's like, hey, everything this world has to throw at you, that's okay. Like, mm-hmm. this is going to be tough.
Yeah.
It's going to suck. In his commission to the disciples in here, he's saying that, like, hey, you are going to be imprisoned. They're going to try to stone you. They're going to try running out of towns.
Yeah.
All this stuff. So he's giving this call to, like, hey, this is what it means to follow me and go proclaim the good news. And there's going to be times where it just downright sucks.
Well, and I think Jesus' statement is really about, like, where is your eyesight trained on? Like,
yeah.
Are you focused on the person who might affect your day?
Yeah.
Or the person who's in charge of your eternity?
Yeah.
Like, and the point is not for you. I think the problem when he talks about that is people focus in on the hell thing and they're like, oh, if I don't do this, God's going to send me. No, that's not what the point of the conversation is. The point of the conversation is, why are you worried about somebody who could cause you a little bit of physical discomfort?
Yes.
Instead of focusing on this eternal life aspect, like this, mm-hmm. This kingdom that is going to continue to roll out to the entire world.
Yeah.
Right. And so, like, where is your eyesight? Like, what are you looking at?
Yeah. And so rewind this, mm-hmm. and look at the history of how the Lord has led his people. I can tell you right now, it doesn't take a lot of research to see that he led them to what seemed like earthly unsafe places.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just start in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the Israelites enslaved, mm-hmm. right? But they have roofs over their head.
Mm-hmm.
They have food. It might not be a lot, but mm-hmm. they have some. And then God comes in, frees them.
And well, they also have, they know what's coming.
Yeah, they know what's coming, right?
Yeah.
They know what to expect. Then God comes up and frees them.
Mm-hmm.
And where does he take them?
The desert.
Okay, what's in the desert?
Nothing.
Pretty much.
I don't know if you know this, but the desert is really hot.
True. It's very hot.
It's very hot.
That's for you, Jamie.
I think they sent us a picture when they were in Hawaii uh-huh. of them wearing their shirts in Hawaii in the middle awesome. Of the desert. And yeah, that's pretty awesome. Sweet.
Yeah.
Though, I mean, Hawaii, I mean, that's really hard to call that a desert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, like, continuing on with Israel's journey, like, mm-hmm. then they get to the point where they're going to enter into the promised land,
mm-hmm.
and they send scouts over, and the scouts look, and they're like, there are giants here.
Yeah.
And it's only Caleb who's like, let's go! Like,
yeah.
everyone else
well,
is
Joshua.
Like,
Joshua's awesome,
too,
yeah. But Caleb is the old man who's like, let's go!
Yeah, he's like,
I got this.
He's like, we got this.
Yeah.
Okay, then you continue their journey, say, to Jericho.
Yep.
Right?
They're like, oh, you know, town, big walls, we're going to have to fight them. Tell you what, here's the strategy. Walk around it and dance and sing.
Uh-huh.
Right? Then the last day, do it 7 times. Uh-huh. But then yell at those walls and they're going to fall down.
Yep. Fast forward a little bit further to, let's say, Gideon.
Yep.
Where it's like, hey, I know you're going up against 100,000 plus, but hey, you only need 300.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's one of those moments where you're like, come again? Mm-hmm. Like, am I hearing you correctly?
Well, or let's even go to a book of that is meant to be a satirical book, but it's the book of Jonah,
uh-huh.
right? Where the prophet acts like a heathen and all the heathens act like righteous people, right? Yep. Jonah
and
is
then
told.
He gets mad when they act like righteous people.
Right. Well, Jonah's given this instruction. He says, hey, you know those people who just invaded you and completely wiped out your people and took them into slavery? I want you to go and preach to them because I don't want to wipe them out because I want them to turn from their evil. And like, he's like, well, they just wiped us out.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not a comfortable place to have to go.
No.
You know, and, which prophet is it that had to lay on their side for like 3 years?
Ezekiel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not great.
Yeah. So let's just jump ahead to the New Testament a little
yep.
bit. Like, so this is post Jesus,
mm-hmm.
book of Acts. You have the disciples getting stoned within an inch of their lives,
mm-hmm.
being thrown out of the city.
Beaten repeatedly.
And what do they do?
Mm-hmm.
They, as soon as they can get up, they get up and they go back into the city.
Or the next city, depending on.
Yeah.
Yeah. They just go in, they continue on with the mission.
Yep, they continue on with the mission. You have,
There's the guy who tells Paul, he's like, hey, I just had a vision that if you go here, you're going to get bound up. And Paul's like, yeah, I'm still going.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm aware that I'm probably going to get arrested, but I'm still going anyways.
Yeah. You have 11 of the 12 disciples being killed in horrific ways,
mm-hmm.
right? So, like, what were their lives safe?
No.
They were imprisoned. They were beaten. They were, they were stoned. All these things.
Mm-hmm.
Peter was crucified upside down.
These are the physical things that happened to them, too. There was a lot of, like, you think about even, like, Paul, who is one of the great apostles, mm-hmm. right? He had people in each of the cities who were, like, talking smack about him when he wasn't there.
Yeah.
Right? That he has to clarify. He's like, no, these are my credentials. This is the authority that I've been given.
Yep.
And when I come here, we'll see if you have the same snark when I come here to talk to you.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And then you also have, like, the difficulties of disagreement
mm-hmm.
between the disciples. Like, you have a whole section in Galatians where Paul's talking about how he confronted Peter.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Peter in his book saying Paul's quite difficult to understand.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you have these butting of heads of prominent church leaders.
Barnabas and Paul had to split ways because mm-hmm. they had a disagreement about how things should go.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem to be that they disliked each other. They're just like, hey, it's more important that we go forward with this than we sit here and bicker.
Yeah. And so following Jesus is not easy.
No, it's not.
Like, and so we need to put that in context there of, like, it's not easy. It's not safe. We're called to be sheep amongst wolves. Another passage that you can look at this, and this is a little bit of a different interpretation on this, but is in the Beatitudes.
Mm-hmm.
Where Jesus says, you're the light of the world, mm-hmm. so don't hide your light under a bushel.
Yeah.
Okay, in wartime,
yep.
what do you do to be safe?
You hide.
You hide your light.
Yeah.
So World War II, when the Blitzkrieg was happening over London,
mm-hmm.
they had mandatory blackouts
mm-hmm.
across the city so that it was harder for the city to be bombed.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually set up fake communities around the city to try to lessen the impact on the city.
Yeah.
Stuff like that, right? So in ancient times, like, if you know someone's coming to attack you, you don't leave all the lights on.
Mm-mm.
You actually hide those lights.
Well, and for two reasons. One is that, one, they'll be able to see you from a long ways off because it's not our modern infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Like, we've talked about this in the past, but about how night is dark.
Yeah.
I mean, you got maybe stars, moon, mm-hmm. like, but depending on, you know, of course, like, clouds and those type of things. But it's dark, dark.
Yeah.
Like, so it's not like when you walk around your city and there's still street lights. No, there's none of that.
No.
It's dark. You don't have that light from people's houses.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, if you have your light on, another thing that happens is that you also can't necessarily see into the darkness.
Yep.
Because your eyes aren't adjusted to the dark.
Yep.
Right? So you let everybody see you, and you can't see them.
Mm-hmm.
But on the flip side of that, if you're also going to be a city of hope for people who are lost or wandering or mm-hmm. on the road, then you also have to have your light shining.
Yeah.
And if you hide it, then they're not going to know where you are.
Yep. So for us to shine our light, to shine the light of Jesus in the community around us is an unsafe thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It'll lead to... In American context, it'll lead probably to more like ridicule,
mm-hmm.
shame, like mm-hmm. people trying to shame you, guilt you, make fun of you, stuff like that. But there are contexts around the world where it leads to imprisonment and death.
Correct. Yeah. We have brothers and sisters in Afghanistan and a lot of the Middle Eastern regions that are going through that right now.
Yeah.
I was actually watching an interview with a Pastor X who has to remain anonymous. And he made a statement. He says, you know, people are encouraged by the fact that we're willing to die for Christ. He says, I often wonder, like, are you willing to live for him though?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I was like, ow, Pastor, that hurts.
Ouch. Ouch. Right? So
it hurts in a good way because it's like it's not a piece of shame. It's a piece of conviction. It's motivating me to be a better version of myself.
Yeah. So what we want to do as churches is we want to actually create a transformative place.
Correct.
A place where people can come for healing and they can be transformed. They can experience the redemption that Christ offers. They can experience the forgiveness, the salvation that comes through Christ. But in order to do that, we have to be willing to accept the mess.
Correct. Well, we talked in a number of our series, we talked about the mess that is equipping people for ministry. too, right? We've said, how many times have we said that if you let people speak on a stage for any period of time, they're going to spout heresy.
Mm-hmm.
If you put people to train in worship leading, some days they're going to be out of tune, out of key. You know, it's not going to be good.
Yeah.
You could be like this last week at our church, which was kind of, it was just a house of cards of everything went wrong.
Uh-huh.
But one of the main thing was we couldn't get logged into the computer, so we couldn't even put words on the screen. That I don't know if you know that if you don't put words on the screen, people have a hard time, like, because people don't typically memorize the songs,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it makes it difficult.
Yeah.
It's going to be messy. Like that, there's just a process in all of that. I know that whenever you train a new sound person, it's messy.
I mean, and look at the more like social justice side of church too. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're gonna say, "Hey, I want to adopt a kid," you're entering into trauma. It's gonna be messy.
Guaranteed trauma.
Guaranteed trauma. If you're if your church that has like a alcoholic anonymous ministry or a narcotics anonymous ministry. It's going to be messy, right? Like when you're talking with people who are in active recovery, like that's messy,
right?
Like there's going to be times where they're going to want to relapse. There's going to be times where you're going to see relapse. There's going to be, and what do you do in those moments, right?
Well, and there's also a bleed in from that, like not just alcoholics and narcotics, but like people who are forgiven by Christ and are being continually formed into His image are going to have relapses too.
Yeah.
Right. And I was actually just listening to, I'm going to recommend a miniseries that's on Walking the Text right now. It's Flora and Fauna from Brad Gray.
Yeah.
And they were talking about the fig tree when Jesus comes out and he curses this fig tree. And I'm not going to give you the whole spiel because there's a lot of good stuff in there.
Yeah.
Go check out the episode. Jesus, he curses this fig tree. And one of the statements that they make is that how often is God coming to your branch and it's all leaves and no fruit? And he quoted from Hosea when it says that when you have inauthentic worship, right? When you're trying to say the right things, but you're not doing any of the right things. When your orthodoxy doesn't line up with your orthopraxy, right? With your duology does not line up with your theology. That he's going to put an end to your parties, an end to your worship, an end to your Sabbaths, and redirect. Right? And it says, like, your fig trees will not produce figs, which is actually the connection into that portion in Mark. But I was sitting there thinking, I was like, man, how crazy is it? Like, because it's when you're talking about creating a safe space in the church, I feel like sometimes what you end up with is you end up with a branch with all leaves and no fruit. Right? If we want it to be safe, that's the risk, is we end up with all leaves and no fruit.
Yeah. I wouldn't even say that's a risk. I would say that's a guarantee.
Yeah.
Because the more you step into that, the more that you realize that you limit, you lose your ability or even know-how to get out in the community and reach the lost, right? Because being a church that is transformative is, I would even say, dangerous, right? Because some of the people you're going to be welcoming in are going to be people that your neighbors might look at you and be like, are you sure you want them in the same building as your children?
Right.
But the reality is the gospel is for everyone.
Right. You know, it's interesting we have this concept of dangerous, right? Because people are like, well, I wouldn't do anything dangerous. It's like, you drive a car.
You drive a car 60 miles an hour down the road.
Yeah, right across the line from a person driving 60 miles the other way.
Uh-huh.
If they forget what they're doing for 1 minute and cross over you, you're hitting each other at 120 miles per hour.
And it hurts.
One of the things we do a lot in Alaska is we get in these like big metal tubes and we go up in the air.
Uh-huh.
And we go from one place to another. Like, that's dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
It's just they've mitigated risk inside of that. But if the engines fail and we're 10,000 feet in the air, I got news for you. It's not good news for us.
Uh-huh.
Right? It's a dangerous thing. There's a lot of things that we do that are dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Even down to like our eating choices, when we talk about fast food, eating fast food is really dangerous because of the saturated fat and everything that is inherently in there. People do it, though. And yet when we get to the church, we're like, well, it needs to be completely safe.
Yeah. So I worked in the challenge course industry for like 14 years. And one of the first things they teach you is they're like, do not say the word safe. Like, they're like, talk about how you really mitigate the risk.
Right.
Because if you are putting someone 50 feet off the ground, tethered from a harness, some ropes, some cable, whatever, however they're doing it, because there's a bunch of different systems, there's going to be risk.
Right.
Right.
And so mitigating, like even coming back, let's come back to the Bible, because let's talk about the New Testament, right? Jesus does mitigate risk. One, he's taken these disciples and they've walked with him.
Yes.
He's taught them. They've walked through tense situations with him.
Yes.
So it's not like they've never been in tense situations before, right? But now they're going without him. They're going by themselves.
Yeah.
Or you take, for example, after Jesus ascends, now there is the council, right? There's the three apostles that Peter, James, and John. And when Paul is going and he's actually ministering to all the Gentiles and they're like, hey, we need to figure out exactly what we need to do for them, they come back and they have a conversation. And Paul says himself, I'm going to submit to whatever they have to say. Right?
Yeah.
There is things set up for the safety of the people, right? Like for to mitigate the risk in that conversation. But what it's not going to do is it's not going to mitigate the risk to the point where you're not actually moving out and doing.
Yes.
Right. Coming back to our idea of a car, like I drive my car, but if I stick within the speed limits and also I put on my seatbelt, I'm still engaging in something dangerous, but I'm also mitigating the risk to my body as I go and do it.
Yeah. You also fix what's broken when like parts of your car fail, you make sure it gets fixed. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Stuff like that. Right.
100%.
You mitigate the risk.
Yeah.
So this kind of rolls into our next thing, which is reputation. And so the idea there is oftentimes we put on this guise of safety for the sake of the reputation we want to maintain. So like to put on a, to just give a really practical example of this, a lot of times I'll hear churches say like, we want to have a good reputation in the community, so we want to be safe, which is like, okay, I hear what you're saying there, but there's a couple things wrong with that.
Right.
A couple things that maybe you should think.
I like the first half.
Yeah.
I don't know if I love the second half.
Yeah. First half with the reputation is, who are you trying to please?
Right.
Right. Paul addresses this. He's like, am I trying to please man or God?
Right.
And he redress, he, spoiler alert, he addresses it as a rhetorical question, right?
There is a correct answer
to that
question.
This is, as a friend of mine likes to say, Paul was being sarcastic in this moment.
Yeah.
Well, he's like, am I trying to please man or God? He's like, come on, guys. And then Paul also addresses this. He's like, who are you following? Like, are you following, like, where he's like, some of you say you follow Apollos. Some say you follow Peter. Some say you follow Paul. And he's like, well, spoiler alert, we all follow Jesus.
Right.
Like, let's follow Jesus.
I think a lot of times churches, actually what they want is they want a reputation of doing good.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, not a good reputation, but they want a reputation of doing good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and being a place where people can come if they're broken.
Yeah.
Right? People can come if they're hurting.
Yeah.
People can come and they're going to be accepted.
Yeah.
But not left where they are, right?
Are you going for the Christ-like reputation? Like, do you want to be a church that's known for being Christ-like?
Right.
Cuz if you do, you're going to enter into some messy places.
Right. Like, to your point, is Jesus was known to socialize with tax collectors and sinners.
You know.
It was not shocking for there to be prostitutes at his table.
No, he partook in the forbidden free time activity of laying hands on lepers.
Yep.
Right? Like, he was known for pushing the envelope and going to places where people were like, are you sure about that?
Yeah, his reputation with the Pharisees was not good.
No.
His reputation with the people was really good.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't, he never let people stay where they are. He invited them to a deeper reality.
Yeah.
Right?
A good example of this is John 4, the woman at the well.
Right.
Where I like to view it as kind of like a first reaction video from the disciples' point of view, because they're like, okay, we're going to go get some food. And then they come back and here's Jesus sitting with a Samaritan woman. And they're like, what do we do about this? And they don't know what to say. So then they go up and they're like, are you hungry?
You want some food?
You want some food?
I have food that you didn't know about. Did he go in and get bread without us?
Right. Right. But that woman did not stay where she was at.
Mm-mm.
She was transformed because Jesus sat down with her.
Well, and Jesus was never going to force you to come with him.
No.
But he is always going to extend this invitation, because she's like, hey, I recognize you're a prophet. And then she puts out the big dilemma that was between the Samaritans and the Jews at that time. You're like, we worship on the mountain. You worship in Jerusalem. Like, which one is right? And he's like, well, that's actually not the point. Because when Messiah comes, you're going to be able to worship in spirit and truth, and I'm going to invite you into that.
Uh-huh.
Right?
And then he's like, spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert, that's me.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh. And then he also gives that invitation of living water.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, there's living water that's going to bubble up inside of you.
Yeah.
Do you want to be a part of this kingdom that is quite different?
Yeah.
And now in her case, she is quite enthusiastic about it and runs back and tells everybody about him.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best evangelism stories in the New Testament. I love it.
And there's other times where Jesus puts this invitation out, where like the richer young ruler, which doesn't specifically say like rich, like that's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah,
but
likely a landowner of significant quantity.
Yeah, likely.
Yeah.
And Jesus is like, he's like, well, what do I need to do to follow you? Jesus lays it out. He's like, well, I've done all these things. He's like, all right, then now go sell everything you have. And he's like, okay, hard pass. Sorry.
Yeah.
And so you have instances where people say yes, and you have instances where people say no.
Yeah.
So, but coming back to reputation is like, whose reputation are you going to follow?
Right.
And if you say Jesus, okay, then you really need to look at who Jesus was and how he lived.
Yeah. Coming back to the idea of Samaritan too, Jesus tells the story of the Good Samaritan, right? Yeah. And it's in response to the teacher of the law about who is my neighbor. And he tells a story that the Samaritan was the guy who gave mercy, right? And he says to the teacher of the law, he says, go and do likewise and you'll live.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Which to a teacher of a law to have someone say, go be like a Samaritan.
Yeah.
Is like...
It is not a fun conversation,
no.
But it is an invitation once again, which we don't actually know what the teacher of the law does. Mm-hmm. Now, I think there's a good learning lesson is that there's a tension in like this invitation is given, but what actually happens?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So there's that piece of reputation, right? Mm-hmm. Whose reputation do you want? Are you just trying to look like nice people in the community, or are you actually trying to be like Jesus?
Yeah.
Now, Jesus, that was probably a poor turn of phrase. Jesus was a nice guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it. I'm cutting that out and snipping it and being like, Spencer is saying that Jesus was not a nice guy.
Not at all what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, nice doesn't always mean that you're going to say things that people always want to hear either.
No.
Right? Because it's not nice to not tell people truth.
Yeah.
But it is also not nice to tell people truth in a really despicable way.
Yes.
Hence, if you don't know what I'm talking about, go back like 4 episodes and check out The Kingdom of Trolls.
Yes. So those are a few thoughts on that. And then kind of the last piece of this conversation is stewardship.
Mm-hmm.
And so how does stewardship tie into this? And really the answer that I would have for you on that is that stewardship is not just how well you take care of money, but it's how well you take care of everything that's been entrusted to you.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the parable of the talents, right? The people who were like, hey, I took 5 and I multiplied it. And here's 10. Mm-hmm. I took 10, now here's 20. And then the person who was like, I took the 1 and I buried it. That was the person where the king was like, why?
Well, and the whole idea of, because this comes back to a Roman idea, if you don't mind me going on a tangent here really quick with the talents, because I think this is really going to help us understand this stewardship idea. Jesus is using a very Roman idea because Israel is under Roman occupation at that point. Mm-hmm. So the way Rome did things is they would come and they'd conquer an area. Then they leave behind a bunch of people to change the area that they came to look more like Rome.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And they would give them a certain amount of money and then they would move on. They go conquer in the next area. And then a leader would come and travel around in these different areas. Right. And they come back in a certain amount of time to check what you did with what you were given.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Did you actually do what you were supposed to do with what you were given? Now that's called by the way, these people that are left in these places to make it look like the place they come from, they're called apostles,
mm-hmm.
right? It's a borrowed word from Roman culture. Apostolic means that you're taking where you come from to make it look like, or where you're going to look where you came from. And if we come from heaven, then we bring heaven to earth.
Yep.
Right. So this idea, and then this ruler would come out, and you'd go and you would meet them halfway out from the city. You'd have all the people come out and greet them. It's a thing called a parousia.
Yeah.
You would actually come and meet them, and then you would bring them back to this area, and you would talk to them about all that you did with what they left.
Mm-hmm.
And in the story of the talents, you have the guy with the 10 talents. He goes and he puts it to work, and it creates 20 more, right? And you have this guy that's given 5 talents, he puts it to work and it creates 5 more. There is no distinction in the way that the master treats either one of them. Uh-huh. They were both faithful with what they were given.
Yep.
Some was given a lot and some were given a little, but they were both faithful, which does suggest that the guy who's given 1 would also have been recognized, provided he had put it to work.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, what he did is he buried it in the ground. And there's a couple other like fun things that are going on, but I'm not going to get into it. He buried it into the ground because he was afraid of losing what he was given.
Yeah.
And the master's like, man, you could have at least popped that puppy in the bank and earned some interest.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, you're like a tree that has a bunch of leaves and absolutely no fruit.
Yep.
And I'm going to take this coin away. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to give it to somebody who's actually going to use it.
Yeah.
And so in your idea, like conversation about stewardship, we have been given a deposit of a changed life by the grace of Jesus Christ,
mm-hmm.
and a deposit of the Holy Spirit, which we just talked about all these spiritual gifts, right?
Yep.
And what are we actually going to do if we don't, we can't take our talent,
yeah,
can't take our deposit and bury it in the dirt.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's actually meant to be used. And at the very least, you should pop that pumpy in the bank.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
At the very least, you should be popping that puppy in the bank.
At the very least.
But there are segments of our faith that people just buried in the dirt.
Yep. Very true. And so the idea of stewardship is like, are you actually taking care of what's been given to you?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Are you, if you're a church leader and you are a ministry leader and you have a group of people who are trying to spread the gospel and you are not doing that, are you taking care of what? Are you taking care of what the Lord's entrusted to you?
Mm-hmm.
Are you taking care of that? And so coming back to the idea of stewardship in safe places is like, if we're stewarding the gospel well,
mm-hmm.
it's not actually going to be safe.
Correct.
There's going to be risk involved.
Yeah.
If you're managing money well,
mm-hmm.
there's going to be risk with the money.
Yeah. There's just no way around
it. There's no way around it, right?
Even if I bury it in the dirt, there's risk.
There's risk. All of these things have risk. Okay. They all have risk. We can mitigate the risk best we can, but we need to steward the gospel well into our community to the point where we are saying, okay, there's going to be risk to this, but we're going to do it anyways.
And I think maybe a good question that you have, because there's a lot of churches that do this really well.
Yes.
They do it really well. But healthy churches, healthy organizations have conversations that are uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So I think one of the questions that you can ask is, in our church, are we taking enough risk?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think sometimes the question is, are we being safe enough? Right? Yeah. But the other question you should be asking is, are we taking enough risk?
Yeah.
Is there a place in our life that we could afford
yeah.
to just lay it out just a little bit further on behalf of the gospel? Because God is looking for fruit. And like, I want to really stress this. If God moves on your heart in your church to make a transformative difference in the way that you're going to do things overnight, sure, go and do that. Trust God.
Yeah.
But more likely what he's going to do is over the next year, 5 years, he's going to take you from where you are to closer to where he wants you to be.
Yeah.
And you can't rush that because you need to be able to steward that through everybody.
Yeah. I have a tendency in my life to be like, here are all the changes we're going to make. We're going to do it all at once. Right? And yeah. It always works wonderfully every time. So then oftentimes when I get into ministry positions that I've worked in, I will look back after year one and be like, man, nothing got done.
Yeah.
I'll look back after year two and be like, man, it feels like nothing got done. I look back after year three and it's like, man, it feels like I didn't do anything. But then it's like, okay, well, let me just pause, look back through all 3 of those years and a lot of things changed.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The Lord moved. He worked in his timing. So it's okay. And it's okay to step out and be like, hey, we're going to try something new.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't work, it's okay to be like, all right, that didn't work. Maybe that's not for now. Maybe we just need to put a pause on it. Maybe we need to never do that again.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But you got to take risk.
Yeah.
You got to step out and take some risk. When I am interviewing people for volunteering with ministry, I've had people ask me like, well, how do you make sure they're trained up? And I'm like, well, I don't. To start off, I was like, one, I want to make sure their heart posture is great. And that's where I want to start. We'll make mm-hmm. sure their heart posture is great. And they're like, okay, well, how do you make sure they're spiritually mature? I was like, I want to see that they're growing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, what do you mean by that? I was like, well, I want to see that they are continually growing in their walk with Jesus. Like, that's how I know they're spiritually mature. If they are being stagnant, then I actually have some red, I have some questions I want to ask.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If they're like, hey, I got this all figured out. It's like, let's talk. Right. That's not a place.
And there's the other side of it too, is like in a conversation with a person in a coffee shop or in an office or something like that, you're not really going to have an idea of who that person is. Now, if you put them in a situation that's tense, you're going to have a much better idea. I think it was Sun Tzu in the Art of War, which I'm not, by the way, endorsing his book, but that he just has a statement that it rings true. It says, if you live with a man and his family for 40 years and you eat with them and you dine with them and you work with them and do all these things and you really know this person, and then take that person to the edge of a volcano and dangle them over it, on that day you'll truly meet the man. The point being is that adversity actually shows you who you are.
Yeah.
And so your point is like, how do you make sure somebody's spiritually mature? I was like, we go out and do ministry and we see what happens.
Yeah.
I keep an eye on them because I am okay with the mess because I'm going to come in and pastor it.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
I'm gonna come in and know that it's gonna be messy, but the only way to actually understand what you're learning and what you're putting into practice is to actually take a test.
Yep. Yeah. And so doing life with them, like, that's just a big part of it.
Yep.
I have another friend, he went to ministry school, got his MDiv, all the stuff, got his first pastorate, and he was like, do you know what ministry school taught me? I was like, what? He's like, that I know nothing. Like, that's what taught me. He's like, I came out with all these fancy words that I was like, these guys don't know that. I have to now simplify all these terms that I learned, and I have to essentially unlearn what I learned to a degree, right? But so often we're like, well, we need people to be super well-trained before they can go proclaim the gospel. It's like, actually, we need to just walk alongside them while they do it.
Yeah.
We need to let them mess up a little bit and be there in those moments and do life with them and pastor and shepherd them. Mm-hmm. That's the way of Jesus.
Yeah.
That's what Jesus did with his disciples, right?
One of my favorite stories about Jesus doing this. Okay. Uh-huh. So James and John, they're coming out of Samaria and the people treat them poorly. Uh-huh. And they're like, all right, Jesus, burn it down. Do you want us to call fire from heaven? Right? And he's like, No, that's not what we're going to do. You know, that's not what's going on here. Uh-huh. And immediately after that, he commissions people to go out and preach the gospel in pairs. Mm-hmm. James and John included.
Yeah.
And Jesus was okay with a little bit of a mess, but he was willing to step in and pastor that.
Yeah.
And to teach that. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be mistakes. I mean, shoot, Peter rips out a sword and chops off a guy's ear. And he's like, Peter, that's not what we're doing. You know, that is not what we're doing here. Uh-huh. You know, there's a lot of those occasions, right? In the Gospels. I mean, we could go forever. Like, Jesus has a lot of these occasions. He's okay with the mess, and he's fine with just stepping in and being like, no, this isn't what we're doing. This is why we're doing this.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So if I was to boil this conversation down to three things, it'd be this: that one, we don't want to be a safe place. We want to be a transformative place.
Mm-hmm.
Second is we want to have the reputation of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing else matters.
Mm-hmm.
We want to put on the reputation of Jesus. We want to put on the armor of God, everything that displays Christ to the world.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then third is we want to steward what we've been given well. So we want to be a place that takes risk. We put on the armor of God. We're ready for what the world throws at us. And we want to steward what Christ has given us well.
Yeah.
So that our communities can be transformed.
I love it.
Because if we're playing it safe, I hate to break it to you, our communities aren't going to be transformed.
Mm-mm.
At least, I mean, let me take that back. They might be transformed. Jesus still might do something miraculous. But it's not going to be with you. It's going to be in spite of you.
One of my favorite quotes from a pastor was, he was having a conversation with some of his students and they were talking about their city, and they're like, our city, you know, our churches, they're so dark, and like the kingdom of darkness is, you know, everywhere. And he's like, well, you're the light of the world. Why don't you flip on a light switch? which sounds like really simple, but like, you physically being present in the midst of chaos brings peace. But for that, you have to go into chaos.
Yep.
And that's the hard thing to do.
Yep. And one other caveat I would say is you're not called to do it alone.
Correct.
Right?
You're called to do it in community.
If we're talking about creating a transformative place, putting on the armor of God, putting on the reputation of Jesus, And being a place that stewards what's given to us, well, we're doing this as a community.
Right.
Right. All too often, churches put the full load on the pastor.
Right.
Right. But that's not what the body of Christ is supposed to do. They're supposed to do it together.
And I have one final caveat before I stop talking.
Yeah.
Thinking about something we talked about earlier is that we're going to send you like sheep among wolves. It's going to be a dangerous place. Like, people aren't always going to like what you stand for. I've made this statement before, and I just think it bears repeating again. If people don't like you because you look like Jesus, that's called sharing the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
If people don't like Jesus because of the way that you behave, that's called sin.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that people don't like you because you look like Jesus, not because you're just a jerk.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And if you need clarification on what we mean by that, we have a couple episodes ago, Kingdom of Trolls.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So, this has been a fun talk. I like mm-hmm. this. I think it's good. We have, an episode coming up next week. We're going to be talking about hypocrites. That's going to be fun. Where this word doesn't quite mean what you think it means
mm-hmm.
and some things that we can learn. It actually applies a lot to what we're talking about today.
Yep.
About how we actually live, in this world, but not of this world.
Mm-hmm.
And, hopefully we're going to have a guest for that, but I'm not going to say a name just in case we're not able to get them scheduled. But we will see you guys next week.
Next week. Till next time.
And that's a wrap for today's episode of Love and Context. We hope you enjoyed this engaging conversation and gained valuable insights into the powerful message of love within the Bible.
We'd love to hear from you and continue the conversation. Connect with us by sending us your questions, thoughts, and suggestions to loveandcontext@gmail.com. We greatly appreciate your feedback and ideas for future episodes.
Stay connected with us on social media for updates, behind-the-scenes content, and additional resources. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Facebook at Love and Context. Don't forget to hit that follow button to stay up to date with the latest episodes and join our growing community.
Thank you for being part of the Love and Context family. Remember, love is at the heart of it all. Until next time, keep seeking wisdom, embracing love, and living out your faith in the context of today's world.